The Truck and Driver podcast is sponsored by Fortune Tires, who manufacture high-quality, durable tires designed for operators who are looking for exceptional value across every application. Fortune Tires is proud to partner with International Tires, the exclusive distributor of their truck tires in the UK. For more info, visit internationaltires.com/fortune or call 0121 552 6888. Drive forward with Fortune Tires.
Hello and welcome to the Truck and Driver podcast. It's Matt Ireland once again, sat in for Dougie. And today I'm joined by Trevor Johnson. Have a quick chat about his life in transport. Now, Trevor, how are you?
Doing well, thanks, Matt.
Yeah, jolly good. Lovely day today, isn't it?
It's a lovely little day.
Yeah, it really is. So how on earth did you get involved in the wonderful world of transport?
Came about after I left the forces and spent a bit of time with the Royal Engineers and hoped to travel with them, but it didn't materialise too much. A bit of spell in Ireland at this time in the 70s, and then unfortunately Germany, which didn't really suit me.
No, West Germany, obviously, at the time, wasn't
that
it?
That was, yeah. British Army of the Rhine.
Yeah.
There wasn't much happening in those days. You were basically confined to barracks, more or less.
Yeah.
And quite boring.
All right, fair enough.
Yeah. I had a drink or two.
Yeah, as a lot did.
As a lot did.
Did you do your test in the forces then? Did they put you through, or did you?
I managed to get my Class 3 license when I was, I think I was 18 or 19.
So is that rigid back
they
in the day?
Four-wheelers, yeah, rigid four-wheelers. And they had a Class 2, again, that was, I think it was when I was in Londonderry. That was the eight-wheelers, up to eight-wheelers. And then when I left the forces, by pure luck, I heard about a TOPS course, and I got the test for nothing.
Oh, okay. What was a TOPS course?
I can't remember what TOPS stood for, but it was basically a government-backed initiative. And it wasn't just for forces. I think it was for people at that time if they were looking for to go into the industry. I don't know.
Okay. So sort of like almost like if you're unemployed, they'll give you...
Yeah, I wasn't unemployed.
No.
Somehow I found my way on it anyway.
Yeah.
And I went to Middlesham, and then I took my test in Ipswich, and I was the Class 1 driver, I think, at 23.
Yeah, not too bad then. No. So who did you work for?
I spent time with Roger Desborough on the eight-wheelers.
Yeah.
Then I went to, what did I do? Oh, I had a mixed bunch of things. And then my father said to me, he had a successful agricultural business, and he said, how do you fancy having to go at haulage with me?
Mm-hmm.
I thought, oh, that's not something we considered. I always thought I'll find jobs elsewhere.
Yeah.
And I had jobs. I was self-employed at the time, but, doing bits for other people.
Yeah.
And it came about that he decided that, we'll give it a try. We discussed it, and we'd give it a go with UK haulage, and started off on the carrots and things like that, potatoes locally.
Yeah, fair enough.
Roller bulkers.
Yeah, as we do around these parts, a lot of agriculture, isn't there?
Yeah.
So roller bulkers in like carrot bulkers.
Yes.
Rather than tip up, they've got a conveyor belt down the middle.
That's correct. That was Wrentham Veg, and it's all local produce here off to markets and things like that.
We're
going then off up to the chip factories up Canes, I think they were.
Was it Scarborough?
Scarborough, yeah.
Yeah. So what was what was your first truck then?
It was in the RFB series with a 265 roller engine in it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Day cab?
It was a day cab, but it got converted to a Jennings conversion.
Oh, is that the one, the little small
sort of perch up behind the seat?
Pigeon box, I think they were called.
One up in the 86, I'd say.
So, not particularly spacious, but get you over. It's better than sleeping across the seat.
Absolutely.
Seats. Yeah. Yeah. So you stuck with that for a fair while?
Quite a long time, actually.
Yeah.
Went on to do various things with that. Time-wise, I can't quite remember, but I'd say probably 2 to 3 years.
Yeah.
And it was a good tool, but I eventually ended up down Felixstowe Docks doing dock work. And
who was that for? Someone like Ferry Masters or something like that? Or?
At the time, we were done with two people. That was Fairweather's at Great Yarmouth.
Yeah.
They had an office down there. And then I was with James Kemble.
Okay, yeah. So and containers?
Containers.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did odd tilts, but they're mainly containers.
Yeah, fair enough. How did you find the dock work? A bit different to agricultural work.
I didn't really have a huge issue with it. I just think the rates were what they were and your traction. Well, we had our own trailers. We had a 40-foot flat trailer.
Yeah.
and a 20-foot Skelly at the time.
Yeah.
And we bounced between that work, and also we'd done a lot of work out of a waste paper out of what was Earl's in those days, Maybank.
Oh, right.
A lot of stuff.
Yeah.
And Cannon Factory work, we used to do a lot of chunking for the Cannon Factory.
Yeah.
So rope and sheet work.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we'd done that, and then so eventually went to the docks anyway, and the docks is where I'd done quite a lot of all of the country, to be honest with you, with that one. That was quite nice to see a bit of this country.
Yeah, stretch your legs a little bit.
Yeah.
So what happened down the docks there? There was a bit of an iconic moment for yourself, wasn't there?
There was a moment.
Yeah.
Yeah, as we do in the Route Master, normal evening, walked outside, and there stood two units. I forgot what the units were on the front, but it's the trailers that attracted my attention.
Yeah.
They were all kitted out unusually with boxes on the side, spare wheels hanging off them and all sorts.
Yeah.
And they just happened to meet the drivers.
Yeah.
And asked them what they're up to.
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't believe what they said to me. It said, so we're off to the Baghdad trade fair.
Yeah.
Where's Baghdad?
Where's that in England?
Where is Baghdad? And I said, you can drive there. He said, yeah, we can drive there. So that picked my interest. And I said, being owner drivers that we were, so father and son, what sort of money can you make on it? And so I think they weren't owner drivers. I think they worked for a company. So they didn't know too much about that. But I thought, that's worth exploring.
Yeah.
That's worth exploring. So I'd done a bit of asking around.
Yeah.
And there was another chap who lived here, and he's very well known in the haulage industry, Alan Bremner.
Yeah.
And Alan had done Middle East work before, but he was then also working down the docks.
Mm-hmm.
So he could fill in some of the blanks for me on
right,
the side.
Right, okay, yeah.
So although he wasn't ready to go and do that again himself at that particular time,
yeah,
he put me on and said, yeah, there's money to be made, but you have to be, there's also pitfalls with it.
Yeah, the pros and cons from an old hand.
Yes.
Yeah.
So that, with information from himself, I came out and fed this information back with my father, and we had a full discussion on it. Obviously, the ERF would probably have to be changed. I wouldn't be prepared to go down there in one of those.
No.
I was also prepared to maybe go and find another company to drive for. That was what was in my mind.
Yeah.
But my father said, well, and I explained to him how the funding worked and different things. He said, I think that's worth a try.
Yeah.
And we went from there.
Fair enough. So he was quite an astute man then to...
Yeah, he's not
going to weigh it all up. Yeah, he didn't just go.
No. It had to have. I mean, although I was only probably 26 at the time,
mm-hmm.
I'd got a reasonable head on my shoulders then, and I knew that we're at work to earn money.
Yeah.
We're not there for the fun of it.
Yes.
So this had to work, and I knew what we were doing at the time was just working.
Yeah.
Like we can sometimes call ourselves busy fools.
Yes.
Run about. So this was a tick two boxes for me. This would be adventure.
Yeah.
And earn.
Yeah.
So yeah. That was there. So we then explored a bit further.
Yeah. And what better way to travel than to travel and get paid?
That's what I always thought of the way to do it.
Yeah, absolutely. So you didn't just go gung-ho into it either. You obviously looked into it a lot. And so you decided, obviously, the ERF had to go.
Yeah.
So did it take a while to find a suitable replacement? Do you have a sort of shortlist or...?
Well, I think the Transcon came in, the Ford Transcon was definitely on at the top of the list for it.
Yeah.
Don't ask me why it was. I think the Cummins engine and the fact that it was the big cab and the walk through the spatial cab.
Yeah.
I thought, well, you've got a good combination of vehicles there. And,
yeah.
And looking around, the birds I ran fleet of them at that particular time around here.
Yeah.
So we then looked around for them, and we did try a Savium. First,
yeah.
Why not? But that was the same cab, but on a lower.
Is that the MAN cab, Savium?
Well, Savium, Hatchell, I think, had them.
At least they did, yeah.
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 But that was basically the Transcon cab was then jacked up higher to give the walkthrough.
Right.
So I actually tried the Savium, but no, that wasn't really. I just wanted the walkthrough element to it.
The one with the column change as well, the Savium, can you remember?
I know. I always drove it. We had one for about a week.
Yeah.
And along the dock work, it was an okay vehicle.
Yeah.
That didn't really float my boat to that extent.
Fair enough. No. Yeah.
And so then we looked about, and then an owner driver at Manning Tree advertised his for sale, and he was, I think it's fair to say, he was a hobby driver.
Yeah.
And he enjoyed his truck. He went across to Belgium. He brought it back himself. had painted up and done up and how he wanted it.
Yeah.
And we went down and had a look at that. And, we can do something with this.
Yeah, seemed like
it was in good condition, well looked after.
Yeah.
And, that's how we chose the vehicle.
Right, okay. So that was a tractor unit sword. So what? So were you thinking of pulling other people's trailers, or what were you?
No, we didn't even consider that at the time, because I don't recall anyone saying as Tramber, the big ones in Pioneers of it, and they had their own trailers, but I never considered going down there for some reason.
Right.
So we considered the own trailer, mm-hmm. and we looked about for what was up around, and I think it was Harrison Commercial up on the M6 somewhere where it came from.
Yeah.
And they were advertising these trailers, and sure enough, they had an ex-Will Hire, ex-Middle East spec one with the big Pro Power axles on.
Yeah.
And that's what we went up and had a look at, and we took the RF up there solo, mm-hmm. and came back with the trailer.
All right, lovely job. So if it was a Middle East spec trailer, did it already have a belly tank and lockers, or was it just a stronger sort of tilt?
The way I understood it was they were designed for the Middle East,
yeah.
But that certainly never had any extras added to it.
Right,
was the big axles with the oil-filled hubs on,
yeah.
Big square axles on them. And they're on leaf springs, believe it or not, as well. But I suppose everything was then.
Yeah.
But it had a full solid structure, all metal frames in the roof,
mm-hmm.
and the wooden boards down the side of it. So it was well made.
Yeah.
It was quite a heavy duty.
Yeah. So did you get a belly tank put on it before you went, or?
That was made by a local company down here, and that was, before it went out, it had a belly tank, a water barrel,
yeah,
which came in the form of an ex-beer barrel, and a toolbox on the side, and a food box, yeah.
Yeah.
Stills food, yeah.
Yeah,
fair enough. And that was enough to get us by, so we had the spares, what we could carry on little bits.
Had you sorted out any work before, or, you know, any ideas of who you're going to work for?
Yes. I was given a name of a company that was running out of Bury St Edmunds, and I can't remember the name now. I remember exactly the location. I remember the guy sat in his chair, went and had a chat with him. I was sort of pulling the containers of time.
Yeah.
He said, yes, we have openings, and we do have to use owner drivers. If you've got your own trailer, that's great. And we're looking for people. And he said, when you get it, they had a chat about some money, about prices.
Yeah.
Thought, well, it's in the ballpark figure,
yeah.
I guess, because we didn't know what the costings were.
Yeah.
Worked with that. And, he said, when you've got kitted out, give us another ring. And I've always got loads going down there.
Right, okay.
Which, true to his word,
yeah,
he gave me the first load.
Right, okay. Where was your first load to then?
Well, the first load he called us for was, he said, I've got a load for you going out and whatever. He said, you all ready? I said, yes, we're ready. He said, Esfahan. I said, where is Esfahan? He said, Iran.
Right.
That didn't really ring right, Iran. I thought, I've heard too much about Iran. So I said, leave it with me for a little while. I'll just have a chat with someone. And he said, probably best leave that one alone.
Is this because this is the time when the Shah had been deposed, didn't he? So the political situation had changed, and you didn't really fancy... especially on your maiden voyage.
No, that's right. I just think there was too much uncertainty to go out there on a first one and get caught on something, which maybe is politically, I'm going to get involved in something. I didn't want to do that.
Yeah, no. Fair enough. Yeah. So not done one back. Yeah.
And so I think then he called me back, I don't know, not long after really. He said, right, Baghdad. I said, I've heard of Baghdad, so I know where that one is.
Right.
I said, okay. I said, what is it? He said, you're loading generators out of Grantham,
right.
And they were full cube. I can't remember if there was four or six or even eight of these generators.
Yeah.
He said they're going one drop into Baghdad.
Yeah.
Okay. And he said the price. I said, okay, when they're ready to load. I said, you got someone to go with me? Yeah, there'll be someone to go with you.
Yeah.
And so off I went and loaded these. Well, I think within that week, I went and loaded them.
Yeah.
And arrived at his office to pick up the carnetier and the upfront money.
Yeah.
To ask the question.
Yeah. Who am I going with?
Who's going with? Who am I going with? You can probably guess the other bit.
Was it? There's nobody to go with.
Sorry, we've got no one shipping out at the moment. Another 2 weeks at least before they go. Anyway, you'll be all right. So I'm on my map.
Yeah.
Off to the Austrian, off the Austrian Yugoslav border.
So obviously before you'd shipped out, you obviously had experience of West Germany. from or to a degree.
For driving, yes, yeah. Because I'd driven over there quite a bit, so I didn't find that daunting driving over there.
No, yeah, no. But you hadn't really driven outside of sort of West Germany, and you'd been like Benelux. And
I'd been to in the car as military, so we travelled a bit while I was out there. They had my own car out there, so we'd been to Switzerland and different places down the borders and whatever.
So you had a rough idea of where and how to get certain places to a degree.
I think I follow the map.
Yeah, very true.
Yeah.
So you set off. Which, can you remember which way you shipped out? Was it Felixstowe? Quite regular.
Straight out of Bury St Edmunds with my carnetier, all damped up, my tea form from the belly tank with the diesel in it, red diesel. And then, night ferry out.
Townsend Thorason, wasn't it?
Townsend Thorason,
yeah.
And several trips on then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then what, fairly uneventful run?
No, I missed a train. I think I forget what happened now. Because I didn't have permits for Germany, I then had to travel via the train down to Munich.
From Eiffel to Cologne, mm-hmm.
Cologne, that's right.
Yeah.
So I that was a night train, so I got on the next one there, ran down, and I didn't miss it. It was wrong to say that. I actually arrived early in the day and said, oh, no, it doesn't run until the evening. So I was thinking maybe there's a few of them that ran, but no, this was the one train.
Right.
So there was no problem.
Yeah.
So I got off onto that, dropped off the other end, and then headed to the Austrian border. That would be Salzburg, one of the sort of things.
Spielfeld.
And at that crossing, that's where I was fortunate to meet some other drivers.
Right, okay. British drivers.
Yeah.
So what, just a couple of them?
There was a couple. I think there might actually have been three, and I can't remember. I think whether one wasn't going all the way down there, he'd got something else. I think there was three originally, but there was two others that went straight to all the way. They said they'd gone to Baghdad, so I lucked in big time.
That's perfect, there. Yeah.
I did.
So you just ran down with them?
Yeah. That's basically what happened was they were running quite light, and I was running quite heavy with these generators, and I just thought, this is a heavy load. Anyway, what they'd say was, we'll meet you, get onto this road, and we'll meet you, I think, with the National Yugoslavia was one of the places we stopped and met, and said, you'll see it on the right-hand side.
Yeah.
And that's how it went. So we weren't running nose to tail.
Yeah.
It was just doing your own driving.
Oh, perfect.
And which is the way I wanted, because I didn't want to be chasing after someone. I couldn't chase after them, because it was quite heavy.
Yeah, exactly. So, and it's just much nicer not to have the same trailer in front of you for days on end as well, isn't it? And just... You don't take it all in. You don't learn the route as well, do you?
And it's I don't think you learn anything by following someone.
If you sit following the sat nav,
you learn very little.
No, exactly. Yeah, and that's it. So, so obviously you had a map to direct you.
Well, I didn't after that, because once I got to the Austrian Yugoslav border, I hadn't got a map then.
You didn't have a map.
No such thing as a map.
So you got the Yugoslav border with no map.
Uh-huh.
So just follow road signs, just figure out.
Belgrade, say on this bank road, then the Belgrade, and then Belgrade, say, that's how it worked.
Yeah. So no map beyond Austria.
No.
Off you went.
Off I went. where was I going to get one? I don't know.
I must have got one somewhere, I suppose. But
atlases aren't very, very good, are they?
No, they're not very, not very detailed.
No.
So, down to the National the very well-known National Hotel, which is sadly no more. And then just keep going south. Which way did you go through Capicula, or was it
Sala? Yeah, it was Capic.
Yeah.
Up on that trip.
Yeah.
Well, the first few trips were that one. Unfortunately, I got to the point where I was told, and I think maybe Alan said this to me, or maybe Alan and some others, try not to run in the dark.
Yeah.
For obvious reasons.
Yeah.
Things on the road and no lights, animals and all sorts.
Yeah.
Potholes and whatever. So I tried not to. On this particular leg of the journey, they said they were going to make it down to the Bulgarian border.
Yeah.
So anyway, I was told which way to go. So I went through all the tunnels, down the bottom. Was it
down past Nish.
Nish.
And all that.
Through those.
Beautiful roads.
Oh, it's lovely. But you're all through these rocky tunnels.
Yeah.
But when I was coming out through, I must be getting close to the border. And I was going through a village and all of a sudden this person ran out in front of me.
Mm-hmm.
What's going on here? And that was a policeman.
Right.
And he bang stopped. I thought, and he then walked he stopped me, and then he went to the passenger side, not realizing I was right-hand drive, I guess, and banging on the cab. I thought, do I just drive off, or what do I do here?
Yeah.
And I sat in my mind, and I called him around. Next thing he rang is there with his pistol out.
Ah.
I thought, oh, nice, this is good. I'm now running in the dark, you see, and this is one of the dark things. And,
yeah.
And it was an afternoon, I think he'd been having a hard drink, as he did in those countries.
Yeah.
And all he wanted was cigarettes.
Right.
And so that's my first experience of the bakshish, so to speak. You know, you just stop a lorry driver and ask for 20 fags and just with your pistol and away you go. And that's, I thought, oh, this is an eye-opener.
Yeah.
And I made it not far further down the road, and I was at the border with the rest of the guys. I found them.
Yeah.
So there's this whole, oh, well, these things can happen.
Yeah. Fair enough. Can you remember what the border crossing was like?
I think on that particular occasion, that was pretty good. For particularly, we all know, can be a nightmare.
Yeah.
In 3 years, I ran down there various times. I had to skirt it and drop to Uppsala.
Yeah.
Or come round through the top one, through the back way into Turkey from Bulgaria.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, this was a good run. We had a good run down. And I think we then made the Londra. We made the Londra camp that night or not.
Yeah.
I certainly remember stopping and going over Mount Blue, because that was the test, first real test, I'd say, for the Transcon, pulling the heavy load.
Yeah.
And up and over the top of that, that's quite a grab.
And then coming back down the other side as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
And you got the gears, and they just thought, well, I'll just sit it in the gear, because you didn't want to try and snatch your gear on those places, because you wouldn't get started again on some of those hills.
No.
Yeah. So anyway, we went up over the top of that, and we stopped in Adana, and I can't remember, just as you're getting into Adana, there was a truck stop on the left, and sure enough, I saw all the vehicles parked there, so I pulled in and met up with them again.
Yeah.
So that was how it went all the way down, really. You know, just on my own. And as you say, you learn something that way.
Yeah, absolutely. You
learn quite a lot.
And it's nice just to know at the end of the day, you'll have a bit of company, you'll have a couple of beers, a bit of food.
And because they could tell you what to expect ahead of you.
Yeah.
So after you come out of Anglia, they'll tell you you're going to cross the salt flats and things like that, but you're going to get the tourist mountains.
Yeah.
And that you have to be careful on.
Yeah.
Particularly going heavy loaded like that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah, you're really on the exhaust brake through places like that.
Yeah, because obviously the technology was 1970s technology, not like what we've got today with ABS and all that sort of thing. Mm. It's
still in your right foot, really, isn't it? The way the ABS should be.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, when I first started driving, I was always told, you know, you go up, you come down the hill, the speed you go up it.
Yeah.
So. Especially driving a DAF. So
the Transcons, you know, only had a heel button and a exhaust gate on it, and that was it.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that was enough. Right gear and use that, then we didn't have a problem with the brakes.
Yeah. No. That's good. So you got yourselves down into Iraq.
Well, down to Adana, I think, was a stop place. It was the Injirlik Air Base where the Americans are. We stopped on the end of that.
Yeah.
Then we're down on right around the Syrian border, and it does echo. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. And then I presume you obviously all went your separate ways.
No, we went all the way down to Baghdad.
All three of us.
Good. Yeah, we went down because we all had customs clearance. Was at Fallujah.
Right. Okay. Yep.
So that was where we went on the desert there, and that's where you met your customers. They were port the cabins. Containers, really, right. With customs people in.
Yeah.
And you were paid one of them to do your paperwork.
Do your customs.
Yeah. And I was, the next morning, I was custom cleared and sent down to TIP on the very same day, which is highly unusual, apparently.
Beginner's luck.
It was beginner's luck.
Yeah.
Yeah. I went down, I got told to go down the road, head towards Baghdad, head towards Baghdad, and you'll see the road on the left. Well, I was up and down this road, I don't know how many times, looking for this road. In the end, I managed to find it. It wasn't a road as we would know. There's no asphalt. It was just a gravel track that led across, I don't know, a mile or so into the sort of desert, really. And there was a massive compound, which was where the generators were offloaded.
Okay.
And I had a full strip out at sort of midday, 1 o'clock in the afternoon. You know. Nice.
What time of year was it? Summer?
It was hot anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Regardless,
I think
of what
it was
time
May
was.
The first trip. I think.
So still hot enough.
It was
hot. Yeah.
I remember just chucking it all back on the trailer and heading back to the Fallujah on the desert, and then rebuild it with some help that evening.
Yeah,
yeah,
a wise choice, I would say. Yeah. So, there wasn't generally reloads out of the Middle East, was there, for anybody, really?
No, so, one done that. No, there wasn't anything.
So did you come back? I mean, who did you speak to for a collection? Did you just...
Well, I was the first tip. The other guys who I'd run with,
yeah,
said that none of them had even been cleared properly to go and tip. So I said, I don't know what to do. He said, well, you said you got Daniel on your arm, you head back.
Yeah.
I said, because my sister was getting married. And I thought, he said, so you've got a chance to get home for the wedding.
Right.
You do it.
Yeah.
I suppose you're right. I did get down here mostly on my arm with the guidance. So I headed back and I went all the way back. And for some reason, I loaded it in Austria. And I don't know why. I only ever done it that once.
Yeah.
And that wasn't the best.
Yeah.
But anyway, we loaded onto the train back home.
Yeah.
And I arrived back Felixstowe again, back in the Felixstowe. The load was for Manchester.
Mm-hmm.
And I arrived home on the Friday and the wedding was on the Saturday.
Perfect timing.
So perfect, yeah. So Ivan, a good night, that was Alan's brother,
yeah,
Ivan Brennan, I think. He ran the load up to Manchester with the ERF, because we still had the ERF.
Right.
Ivan's driving it at the time.
Yeah.
And he took and tipped the load on the Saturday while I went to the wedding.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah.
End of the first trip.
End of the first trip.
And that was a quick one. And I think it was a little over 3 weeks.
That's pretty good going, really, isn't it?
That was good going. Yeah. Very well done, that was, yeah.
Yeah. So you obviously enjoyed it.
Yeah, it was the adventure I was looking for. And when we done the sums on, after you paid all your tolls and ferries and insurance and different sorts of things, we added up how it worked out for those particular ones, and that came out the right side of it.
Yeah.
So that would say, look, we've got something here.
Yeah, so it's better than floating about the UK. Yeah.
Yeah. And the nice thing about it was I liked, my idea was always get the customers a load on, get it to them as quick as you can.
Yeah.
Safely.
Yeah.
And then I'll have a nice bimble back,
mm-hmm,
and then I'll make sure I get to the point there where I get to. I think we used to telex in those days. We didn't have phones or anything like that. So
yeah.
Telex through to, and I got a contact in Germany.
Yeah.
Peter at Bedburg. And I used to telex him from what he called Tolland when I'd be there, and he'd have a load for me out of Munich a lot of the time. And that was good enough. And it was Deutsche Marks I collected on the way out, and that was running money.
Lovely.
After that.
Yeah.
So it worked well.
Excellent. So just started getting into the routine, really, of running out and back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'd try and have a couple of weeks off, 10 days, 2 weeks off when I got back. I wasn't rushing back, so that gave my father a chance to service the truck, and I'd have a bit of
a bit of downtime. Yeah.
And then away we go again and repeat it. And yeah.
Fair
so that
enough.
Worked very well.
Yeah. So was your second trip Iraq again? Can you remember? Or
the second trip, if I remember rightly, was not for the same guy. It was actually for another old name in the business, Knights of Old.
Yes.
That was either my second or third trip, and I can't remember.
Yeah.
No, memory's starting to fade. But that was, they were building a cigarette factory in Baghdad.
Yeah.
And that was part of a consignment for them. There was masses of trucks going out on that one.
Right, okay.
Not that I ran with anyone again, but there was a lot of trucks being taken out.
Yeah, fair enough. So did you do many other countries around the Middle East?
No, I think the first few loads were single droppers, just how it worked. I remember doing one out of Witham, and that was flat pack furniture, believe it or not. A horrible load, so floaty and not nice at all. So, and then I found a company in Attleboro, and they'd done a lot of groupage stuff.
Right.
And so I ended up doing multi drops out there, which covered, you know, down to Basra, across the Jordanian border, up to the Iranian border. And that, the rates were good.
Yeah.
And that gave you a little bit of
variety.
Yeah, variety. Yes, that's a fair word. I think variety. Yeah.
But all in Iraq.
All in Iraq. Yeah. I never did venture out. I was offered a load to, I forget where that was now. That was, I think that could have been Saudi or one of the others, and that was out of Great Yarmouth. And there was some that was drilling, it was some equipment, and someone said to me, be careful of them because they charge more taxes or something, and be careful about the rates on it.
Yeah.
So I didn't know enough about it, so I refused. I turned it down.
I suppose if you've got a regular system going to Iraq, you know your costs, you know, you're getting paid for that, and it's... why deviate for the potential pitfall of, yes, you might earn a little bit more, but if it's costing you twice as much, then you've got to look from, you're looking at it from a business point of view. Absolutely. Rather than, although you're getting quite enough adventure really, getting to Iraq and back anyway. So
that's exactly right. Yeah. And I knew, and the more we'd done it, the less bungs you had to give and things like that. You knew where the places where you could pick up fuel here and there and different sorts of things. You made more money.
Yeah.
So you worked with that, had enough adventure, had the time off, which I enjoyed as well here.
Yeah. So you're getting the best of both worlds,
I had the best of both worlds. Just to bring the truck back, and that came back in pretty good order. I mean, that was sold locally to a local haulier here, and that truck ran for quite a bit while after we had it.
Yeah.
3 years of run down the Middle East with it.
So how long did you do Middle East for?
Three full years.
Yeah.
That's insurance. You bought your insurance annually, and I ran out three full
years. So why did you stop? Was it just...
I suppose you could look at it. I was married. The adventure after 3 years, and the money you were earning, the rates weren't going up a huge amount.
Yeah.
And I just thought the potential for things happened. There were a few things happened, which we think is, oh, I got away with that one.
Yeah.
And I think this is not worth it anymore.
Yeah.
I need a quiet life.
Fair enough. So, the usual story of more people getting involved, the rates not going up, whereas costs are going up. The profit margin's going down.
Yeah.
So if you can make just as much money close to the home, again, what's the point of being a busy fool, especially going that far,
to not,
with all the added hassle of it all, when you can do it a lot more local?
In the 3 years of running down of that truck, the truck let us down twice, or let me down twice. It came back with water pump seized, and one of the earlier trips, and the cold trip it was, but that's temperature shot up on Yugoslav, just dropped into Austria.
Yeah.
That was repaired at Graz, new water pump on. That was unfortunate because we didn't know the grease nipple was on it.
Yeah.
It's one of these flat ones that they take out, put a bung in.
Yeah.
One or two pumps every year, something like that.
Yeah.
So got that repaired, so that cost a few quid, but nothing disastrous.
Yeah.
I had a turbo blow coming back, empty. Trickle back down the hill. I mean, I was going past all those Tonkas up the hill, and all of a sudden the balloon of black smoke came out the side of over there.
Yeah.
Just nearly nosedive.
Yeah.
Power just completely gone. That was fitted with, believe it or not, with a DAF 2800 tap turbo.
Okay.
Talk about whistle.
Yeah.
And the guys over there, it's brilliant. So I said, don't over rev it, because, you know, that wheel might go too far.
Yeah.
So we trickled home with it at a reasonable pace, and I put it back in the toolbox in the afternoon. They paid them the rate for it and brought the turbo back to them, because they wanted the turbo back
right.
if possible.
Yeah.
And they got their turbo back.
Oh, perfect.
So that worked both for good for
us. So, I mean, really, over 3 years, if you've only had two issues like that, that is, again, good going.
That's it, really. Yeah. I mean, and I think I had the brake chamber go on that Pro Power axle.
Yeah.
Again, that had to be, unfortunately, a bolt in the pipe, and we ran on the three chambers on the back.
Yeah.
That came down and back. Unfortunately, happened on the way down. But no one had got those chambers for them, so we couldn't get them. So otherwise, you sit about for ages, or you just took a setting, got down and came back.
Yeah.
And had it repaired when it got back.
Yeah. And I'm sure you saw plenty of other trucks that had tried to make a go of it and not been as prepared or well thought out.
I think I did. Yeah, I did. I saw the successes of some, and sort of unfortunately the incidents others got into. But you had to be, like in most things in life, you have to be prepared and go with the flow, really.
Yeah, do a bit of homework.
Yeah, you do. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. So you come back. The Transcom was sold. That was sold the Lake Barry Thicket from Peasnell in Suffolk.
It was.
He had the Transcom. Yeah. Like you say, ran it for several more years.
Yeah.
What about the trailer? Did you keep hold of it?
The trailer, someone asked me, I told people I was finishing, and people were after the permits, because you needed permits to transit Germany in those days.
Yes.
And I'd built up a good lot of permits.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, this is an ideal time to get rid of the trailer, because no one's going to really want the trailer, the belly tank and all that's there. Let's try and find a buyer for that. So we decided we'll put the permits with the trailer. That gives us one thing, and that's out went.
By all
yeah,
nothing.
Yeah, done well out of that.
Yeah,
as well.
So someone had that job done.
Absolutely.
So you then sort of found yourself sitting there thinking, what next, I guess?
You wouldn't believe what I'd done. I went and thought I was going to have some time off. That didn't really work. So I went down and someone said, you need to sign on. I said, sign on for what? I said, I'm not asking for money. No, he said, you need to sign on for your pension. I'm 26 years old. I've never thought of it.
Yeah.
Went in to sign on and people said, no, you need to go to this office, that office. I said, oh, no, I can't. What are you doing? I said, no, sorry, that's all right. I walked down to the job centre. And there's a job for a dust cart driver.
Oh, right.
In Lodstock. I drove a dust cart for a year. I went there temporary and I ended up being there a year. Quite enjoyed that.
Yeah, you couldn't get much further from doing Middle East, really, could you, to drive around locally in Lowestoft?
That's right.
But if you enjoyed it.
Well, I enjoyed it, and that was different. Home. That's different. And I think that led me to things later on that set me up quite nicely in life later on.
So what happened after the dust cart then? Can you remember?
Yeah, I then needed a little bit more money. I was thinking of the first daughter, and then I went to work for Roy Bartram.
Yeah, the Bartrams.
Yeah.
Long established Audi.
Long established Audi.
Yeah.
Yeah. Got me 311.
Yeah.
My shed.
Yeah. The mark you said in Atkinson.
Yeah. That was my first one. I think actually my first week I was actually in a Roy Humphrey F10.
Right.
Yeah.
So you spoiled.
I wasn't quite ready. Then the next week it was back into the shed.
So what do you think of Sedna Atkinson after getting out of the Transcon then? Was it a bit of a let down?
Let's say it done what it had to do. It was the twin steer then, because we were on two axles, one with the Transcon.
Yeah.
That's my first time with the three axles.
Yeah.
And we'd done a lot of farm work and a lot of pulp nuts and things like that. And you really had to think hard about what you were doing with them.
Yeah.
Yeah, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
But they were a bit under par. They had the E10 engine. I think the Cummins E10 in it.
Yeah.
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 But that got about
twin splitter as well, I think, weren't they?
Do you know? I can't remember now. It wasn't really a problem. So I'd driven all sorts of different boxes, starting on the brown 5-speed.
Yeah.
When my early days with Roger.
Yeah.
And done the splitter on the, what you call it, so the range change, would probably done several different gearboxes by then.
Yeah, fair enough. So were you at Bartrams for quite a while or short-lived?
No, I think I'd done a couple of years with them.
Yeah.
I got the 411 when John Yule, I think, someone came off the road and I had their 411.
Yeah.
And I used to do quite a lot of long loads for them. So,
yes.
With the speed deck.
Yeah. Yeah, long but light, weren't they?
Long but light, yeah. Up to 74. I've never done the ones that Joe done. I've never done the long, long ones.
Right.
But 74 on your arm is still something when you're going into London and all the cities with them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they did some pretty impressive long loads, Bartrams, back in the day with speed deck. Because I think the trailers were Rosh House, I think.
I can't remember. I remember the colour of it. I remember being yellow, and then Joe always had to have someone with him.
Yeah. Yeah, so, I mean, that must have been fairly interesting work, doing that. So, something a bit different to sort of you run-of-the-mill sort of farm work as such.
I enjoyed my time with them. That came about, and things changed a little bit, and then I got a call from a friend of mine who I knew met with while I was on the dust carts first time around, and said, look, we've got a private contractor now, will you come work for us? And cut a long story short, I went there, cut half my rate, really, because I was working long hours on the road, going away Sunday and come back Friday.
Yeah.
So I wasn't really getting the home life.
Yeah.
Decided I might try something else, you know, do a bit of driving, work on the dust carts. Again, I was driving the dust carts.
Yeah.
But within 3 weeks, I was a supervisor, and eventually went on to become the manager of them. So I've managed them for quite a few years.
Yeah. So was that sort of the end of the... being on the road, was it?
Or? That was the end of being on the road.
Yeah.
Until a chance encounter again where someone came in and asked one of my supervisors at the time if he would do some work on a lorry for him. That was Birdseye doing the Hams Hall run with the fridges.
Okay.
He said, here's the guy you need to ask. Trevor, I said, what are you getting me into now? He said, well, you've got a class one, haven't you? I said, and the lady said, have you, Trevor? I said, yeah, I have. What'd you do? And I think I'd done a few for them. That's the first time I stepped back in an Arctic again after probably 15 years.
Crikey.
As an FL.
Yeah, or FL10.
FL10.
Yeah. So it's just
with an automatic box, the first time I've driven an automatic box.
Was that the Geartronic, I think?
No, that was just a straight, as far as I remember, just a straight gearbox. I mean, I had to look at it to see what it was. Because I'd never driven an automatic before.
Right, okay.
Any vehicle.
Yeah. No. That must have been a bit confusing.
The time I got around Barnaby and Benz is what I've ever been out of them.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
Up to Pam's Hall onto the bays there.
Tipping straight back empty.
Yeah.
Nice, easy.
Well, we might have brought peas back. I can't remember. Sometimes we empty, sometimes we brought peas back.
So how long do you do that sort of work for then?
You're asking me something now. It was done on a sort of casual basis because I was still working for the local authority, so that's where I stayed, and I never did move. So I then went for MRCT, and I'd done that for them for 12 years, I think.
Right.
MRCT on the fridges, just as and when.
Yeah, just sort of casually.
Casually, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Nice, easy.
Yeah.
Enjoyable.
Yeah.
Yeah. No
just
pressure.
Keep my hand in. I like driving.
Yeah.
I think the diesel was in the blood, so mm-hmm. it stayed in there, and I still do a bit now.
So what are you doing now then?
I do a bit for Hook Two Sisters up at the Bernard Matthews.
Okay. Well, on the fridge still?
On the farm. Let's go to the farm.
The live poultry?
The live.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So fairly long hours, aren't they, the trucks do, don't they?
They're not too bad.
Yeah.
It suits me.
Yeah.
Sometimes I'm busy, and other times I'm not. I might not get a call for a while, so that suits me fine.
Yeah, you're quite happy just to sort of semi-retired, I guess, is that the best way?
Yeah, I think that's a good way to put it.
Yeah. So just going back, way, way back again to the old Middle East stuff, mm-hmm. We forgot to mention that it was a driver from Hicks of South Wales you were with, and the other chap was...
From Simmons.
Simmons of Darlington.
Darlington.
Yeah.
I think it was, yeah.
Yeah. So they were the two that
put me on the right road, the right track, and guided me down there, which I was most eternally grateful for, because I don't know how I would have done it. I would have got through. I mean, not to say at 26, I'd work things out, but it was very handy to have them, and the fact that I could make their destinations each evening and see them and arrive in Baghdad with them, which is fantastic.
So if you could do one more run, where would you go?
Well, I think if things had have been different to what they are, current situation, I would have liked to probably done the Russia and the cross mm-hmm. that way.
Yeah.
But obviously that will never, ever happen.
No.
That would have probably been my one.
Which is what, funny enough, dear old Alan Bremner ended up doing a lot of as well, didn't
it? It was.
Yeah. For Kepstow's, funnily enough.
Was it?
Yes. Yeah. For Kepstow's. That's an interesting, certainly an interesting line of work. So, but I mean, obviously, never say never. But the way it's looking at the moment, it's very unlikely. Not only the political situation, but the way haulages, the rates are, all things like that.
We still like to drive abroad in the car. We went up to had a little break last year, and we drove up through as far as. Latvia, Riga, top end there.
Estonia.
Yeah, right to the top. Right to the Russian border.
Yeah.
And then came back round just to have a drive about and look around.
Yeah.
And I was surprised by the trucks. It looked like the Polish guys have probably got the job sewn up and the Hungarian Polish.
And the modern equipment they've all got there and the road network through that east has just changed since I started doing it. Monumentally, it's just improved no end.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
Absolutely unbelievable. You look at the state of our roads over here now and you think, who's got it right?
I'm not quite sure it's us, is it?
Not quite
sure. Yeah, I think we seem to be digging more potholes and actually repairing them.
But
there we go. That's another story for another day, isn't it?
Yeah, so I'd probably get the exploring now. I do a little bit now, and I don't mind road trips I want to go to Spain and round. Well, we've actually got... Jan's never been to Romania.
Yeah.
And I said, I will take you out that way, because that's nice to go through, Czech Republic is now. And what you see and see that through the middle there. That's probably another one on the agenda to go. Maybe drop down as far as Bulgaria, we'll see.
Yeah.
It was just a reminisce, and I'd like to reminisce.
Yeah, absolutely. So did you actually get to transit Romania in your time? I guess not, because you would have just gone Yugoslavia.
No. Within the first year, I was running the Eastern Bloc countries.
Oh, were you?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, no, I stopped Austria.
Yeah.
Within the year.
So you go Czech.
Yeah.
And then,
through Czech, Furthermold, up to Prague, and then cut through down to the Keskemit in Hungary.
Yes, down through what, Arad?
Through right through the bottom and out into Bulgaria.
Yeah.
And then, so I've done that. I ran it about 2 years.
Yeah. Do you find it more enjoyable going that
Absolutely.
Way? Absolutely.
And
cheaper. And again, going back to the whole adventure side of things, even I found it much more adventure going that route down across the river Would it have been the barge at the time, or would it have been a bridge?
I can't think of the ferry's name. There's a ferry, Califat ferry. I never went on it. No. I always went over the bridge down into Bucharest. Is it? Bratislava, Bucharest. Bucharest is remaining, isn't it?
Yeah. From Bucharest, then down Bucharest to Sofia.
Well, you didn't go down as far as that, did you? You used to sort of turn and chuck left before, and you, then you're coming through through the border, the Turkish border, that way.
Capicula. Okay, so you've already covered all that area. I think they have been working on a motorway from Arad down to Bucharest, and I think it's now all finished.
Okay.
Incredibly, and it's quite funny because the last time I was in Romania was about 3 years ago, I think it was, off the top of my head. The first section was done, and you're like, oh, this is brilliant. And after a little while, you're like, oh, this is really boring because it used to be quite enjoyable going off and through the hills and all that.
Yeah.
And then when you got to the end of where they're still building it, you come off, and then you get on the old road, and you're on the old road, and after about 15, 20 minutes of being on the old road, you're like, I wish I was on this nice, easy motorway.
It was just normal. I mean, yes, there were some probably atrocious bits of roads, but the country, my memories of the country is quite a lovely country.
Yeah, it's beautiful. Friendly people.
Yeah.
Beautiful scenery. Really enjoyable.
No, I think that's worth a visit now again.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. That's fantastic. Right, well, I better let you get on with your afternoon, Trevor. I think I've taken up enough of your time.
Thank you, mate.
I've most enjoyed our chat. And hopefully we'll catch up with you soon.
Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to the Truck and Driver podcast sponsored by Fortune Tires. Fortune Tires and International Tires, bringing you innovation and reliability to support your operation. Learn more at internationaltires.com/fortune or call 0121 552 6888. Drive forward with Fortune Tires.